Good morning. It is time to get up with a new day in the NFL. Will it mean the return of the man at the center of so much of the conversation? Plus, another running back says he's holding out from a team thinking Super Bowl thoughts once and for all. Does it make sense to pay these guys? And then, the freak is the favorite again. But if things don't go his way at Disney, what comes next for this young superstar? You've got questions, we've got answers as we get up together on this Tuesday morning on ESPN. Mike Greenberg here in Bristol. Busy day, lots to get to. Glad you've chosen to get up with us. And we begin with Get Up and Go. Run around the world of sports. Starts with baseball. Major Leagues Baseball made a new proposal to the Players Association that calls for a 76-game season with players receiving 75% of their prorated salaries if a full postseason is played. Jeff Passan will join us at the top of the hour with all of the latest details. Meanwhile, the NCAA's Division I Football Oversight Committee is set to finalize a six-week practice plan that would have coaches working with players as soon as July 6th. That plan will need to be approved by the NCAA Division I Council at its next meeting on June 17th. To the NBA, the Spurs will be without the services of LaMarcus Aldridge when the NBA season resumes in Orlando. The seven-time All-Star underwent surgery on his right shoulder in April. He will miss the rest of the season. And NASCAR driver Bubba Wallace is calling for the Confederate flag to be banned from racetracks around the country. Though NASCAR has taken steps to phase it out, some fans still bring the flag to the track. And Wallace told CNN's Don Lemon he wants that to stop.
No one should feel uncomfortable when they come to a NASCAR race. So it starts with Confederate flags. Get them out of here. They have no place for them. You know, there's going to be a lot of angry people that carry those flags proudly, but it's time for change.
And from the NFL, a memo sent to all 32 teams yesterday outlined the league's protocols for the full reopening of team practice facilities. However, no timetable has been set for the return of most players to team facilities, as currently only those rehabbing injuries have been allowed inside the buildings. And then to our top story, the NFL world still addressing the implications of Commissioner Roger Goodell's video message Friday saying the league condemns racism and was wrong to not listen to player protests earlier. Yesterday, running back Carlos Hyde suggested one specific next step for the league to take.
I think the NFL can start by signing Kaepernick. I think if they sign Kaepernick, that'll show that they're really trying to move in a different direction. Because Kaepernick was making a statement 4 years ago about what's going on in today's world. And the NFL didn't bother to listen to him then. So I think they should start by doing that.
That was Carlos Hyde. We have a good crew to put together this morning, and they include Jeff Saturday and Cliff Averill, who are with us this morning. It's been a long time since we've had Cliff on, and we will get Booger McFarland coming up a little bit later this morning. Do I have the guys here? I'd love to bring Cliff into the conversation if I can here. Again, Cliff Averill, Jeff Saturday will be part of our football conversation this morning. Booger McFarland will join us top of the hour. We'll have a variety of insiders bringing you the latest from each of the three top-level sports that are working their way towards a comeback. And here they are, Jeff Saturday, and there's Cliff Averill with us live all the way from the West Coast this morning. Cliff, thanks for getting up early, my man. I'll start with you. You heard Carlos Hyde talking there. What are your thoughts on the possibility of Colin Kaepernick coming back to the NFL?
Well, I think Cap has a real chance to actually work out for some of these teams. I think he will get a look. I think he deserves that. But more so than anything, I think he deserves an apology from the NFL for how they went about this. But I also think this situation is way deeper than just Cap signing to a team, right? It's more of doing the right thing, the NFL doing the right thing, the ownership doing the right thing, and getting behind the real issues of America, the issue that a lot of the players outside of the facility in the football field, they're dealing with some of these issues. We're dealing with some of these issues that they're protesting about. So I think that's more so the deeper message than Cap actually getting a job, but also I think he deserves it.
Jeff, what's your perspective?
Yeah, I agree a lot with Cliff. I mean, I think when you're talking about will Cap get an opportunity, I think even going back last year, a little bit of time ago when Cap did the workout down in Atlanta and kind of all the chaos that kind of ensued around all that workout, I think more teams may give him an opportunity to come in and work out and show what his ability is at this moment. But to Cliff's point and the greater point is what's going on in the locker rooms and how many guys are going through this and how many guys are truly in pain. We always talk about in the locker room that we're a family and that we're a group of of men who are called to better this, you know, better our football teams, but more broadly, better our communities. And that's been the cry from the locker room. And I think the NFL and what Roger Goodell said, and I think guys have to get behind it and support it. I think it gives a great opportunity for guys to listen and voice their opinion and get involved to a greater extent than just if you know about what happens with Colin Kaepernick. Again, I think he'll get opportunities and maybe even an opportunity to play on a football team. But let's not miss the other side of this, that it's more guys in the locker room who have a voice and want that same type of you know, be able to have discussions about what's going on in their communities and the pain that really is happening. And I think that's better for our society and better for us as a league.
Yeah. Now, of course, Colin Kaepernick is the player most associated with the peaceful protest during the national anthem some years ago in the NFL, but many other players took part in it as well. Cliff was one. We will talk about that in a moment after we have a chance to welcome our buddy Booger McFarland, who joins us this morning here. We had a little technical issue getting him ready to go, but big fella, great to see you. I'll come to you in a moment. But I did want to ask Cliff, if we could. You took part in that peaceful protest some years ago. You're the first player that I've had on over the course of these last 2 weeks who was a part of that. I'd love you just to share, if you could, what you remember of that experience. What was it like actually being a part of it?
Well, you know, for us, and it was while I was in Seattle, I think the biggest thing was Coach Carroll, Paul Allen, they didn't push back against guys protesting. They didn't have an issue with it. We had team meetings where you know, we would discuss a lot of the social issues going on. And it was also deeper than just football. The one thing I really appreciate from Coach Carroll was he understood. He was listening to the message. It wasn't about the flag at that particular time. It was about, you know, social injustice, police brutality. He understood that, and he stood in there with us, and he allowed us to be able to voice our opinions on these types of things. Because I do know friends and guys that played on other organizations where they were, I want to say, forced to not take a knee or forced to do certain things that they really wanted to do in protest about this. So I appreciate Coach Carroll for allowing and being in tune with the message.
So that was inside the organization. How about the reaction that you felt and experienced from outside the team?
Oh, yeah, no. Now, there's people, obviously, that disagreed with it. You know, that same game, one of those games, I actually got hurt. And going into the hospital, people remember seeing me taking a knee. And people were on there in the hospital rooms kind of yelling and shouting, like, you guys need to stand up and all these types of different things. And, again, missing the message, realizing that it wasn't necessarily about the flag or disrespecting the flag.
Booger McFarland again is with us here, and I've not had a chance to talk to you in a couple of weeks, Boog, but I've seen you on a lot of other shows, and you've been so eloquent in talking about your feelings on all of this. And as we sit here and consider the possibility of Colin Kaepernick getting another opportunity and the possibility of peaceful protest during the anthem this coming football season, how clearly we're in a different place in this country than we were 3 and 4 years ago. How do you see all of it right now?
Well, Greeny, first off, good morning, and it's glad to be back with you. I think based on what has transpired and based on what Roger Goodell has said, I think we have no choice but to expect the NFL to not only allow it, but to make room for it as far as peaceful protest. If we remember 4 years ago when all this went down, Greeny, the NFL was coming up with ways in order to keep the players not only from protesting, they weren't even giving them the opportunity to protest. They were kind of moving the players' entrance back. They were keeping the national anthem played before the players came on the field. Based on what Roger Goodell said, not only can they not stop the peaceful protest, I think they're going to have to allow room for it and mandate that the players are on the field. You can't come out and say that, hey, I support you, I'm with you, I stand there by you, without allowing the players the opportunity to do it. So there has been a dramatic shift. And at the end of the day, this shift really doesn't come down to Roger Goodell or the players, because it seemed like they finally got on the same accord. What this comes down to is the 31 owners plus the Green Bay Packers, are they going to allow this? Because they were so against this 4 years ago because it was affecting the bottom line. It was affecting the money. So are they going to come out publicly again 4 years later with everything that's going on with the civil unrest, with the racial injustices that are going on around this country, and do this again? To me, that's going to be the biggest issue. I think we finally gotten Roger Goodell on board. Now, what do the owners do?
Yes, I think that's the most important point here, and it actually came up yesterday. I want to play for everybody something Dominique Foxworth said on the show, because we were having that conversation exactly, and he was making this point about why the owners in the NFL should do what's right when it comes to player protests. Here was Neek yesterday.
Like, how much money do you need to be free? How much leverage and flexibility do you need to stand up for what's right? Like, they have no bosses. There's no one who can do anything with them. They are billionaires. Do what's right because it's right, not because you're trying to make a buck. You don't need any more. Your house can't get any bigger. You don't need another plane or helicopter or yacht. Like, be free, be honest, and be truthful in this moment. Don't come out and say it because you think it's right or because you think it's going to sell tickets or appease your players. Say it because you have the luxury to be able to say and do the things that are important in this moment. Because can't nobody do nothing to you? They can take things from me. They can take things from your employees. They can't take nothing from you. Be honest and be true to who you are and be true to what you believe in.
Jeff Saturday, that's your old negotiating partner there, and Dominique Foxworth, for those who don't recall, you two were in the leadership of the Players Association during the lockout. So you guys know each other real well and go back a long way and have dealt with the owners in that context a lot for a long time. What is your expectation for how that will be handled?
Well, let me start with this. Fox is obviously a close personal friend of mine. And I will say this, I have a very unique perspective. And when Fox is talking about do the right thing and why it's so important to do it, irrespective of where you are in your life, that it's this is what you should be doing. I am a man whose life has been directly affected in a great way, in a positive way, by strong Black men in my life, starting with my high school football coach, Ron Gartrell, my strength coach in college, Jeff Mad Dog Madden, George Smith, Bulldog. Then you go to Tony Dungy, Jim Caldwell. But my life, even my faith walk, my faith journey has been impacted by African-American men for the better. My family has been changed. And so I think relationship, I heard an African-American man at my church say it this weekend, you know, relationship helps resolve racism. And that's reality of where we are in the country. And so it is for the greater good of our country. And when you have men in your life, this matters. It hurts. There is pain going on. You listen. And I think that voice, that call, and what Fox is talking about is so important. Listen. What can we do to help? What you know, how are we playing a role in keeping this and keeping it moving? What can we do? What type of changes can we make? And listen and be open to listening because you love someone and you're putting someone else above yourself. I love what Fox says, man. He and I went through it. We really went through it for a year and a half, right? Where he was one of the men I trusted most in my life. And I've had a number of different peers in locker rooms and some of my best friends in the world. We've all had significant conversations in life. And I have been very fortunate in what my life has resulted in because of relationships that I've had. But that's Fox's point, man, is you are a billionaire. You do own a football team. You can impact the community for the greater good. So let's step up and make those things happen. And I think ultimately with what you heard Roger Goodell saying and pushing it, you're hoping the owners jump in and become part of the solution in any way they can. No one's perfect. I'm not saying, we can definitely help further along what's going on in our country right now.
It's beautifully said. Booger, what are your thoughts?
But Jeff, when you say that, here's the catch, though. Basically, what you're asking the owners to do is do what's socially and morally right. Like this to me is less of a racial issue and more of a humanity issue. Okay, this country gives us the right to peacefully protest, and 4 years ago, you took it away because it affected the bottom line and it created all hell throughout this country. So what's going to be different? Are you going to do what's humanly right and what's given in the bylaws of this Constitution for everyone, not just African-American, for everyone to peacefully protest? The owners chose money 4 years ago. Do we have any confidence whatsoever that they're not going to choose money again? I think that's what everyone is really contemplating. That's what everyone is struggling with right now.
Yeah, we have not heard a lot from them individually to this point. The owner of the Jaguars, Shad Khan, did have some pretty strong comments last week that I've read. I'm sure there have been others perhaps that I've not seen specifically. But generally speaking, we've not heard a lot from them. It should be reminded again, Woody Johnson, who is the owner of the New York Jets, is currently the ambassador to the United Kingdom in the Trump administration. And we know where the president stands on this. So I will be very interested to see, to the point you guys are making, how the owners react here. Cliff Averill, what are your expectations?
Well, it's the NFL, right? We got to remember this is a $16, $17 billion business. Are they going to do the right thing from that perspective, from a moral standpoint. Correct, right? It's all about what do they value most. For the most part, they value their money. That's hence why they went about that route in 2016 with Cap and trying to stop guys from protesting and all these different things, right? So I see them trying to have a change of heart, but for the most part, the majority of the ownership, I feel like they are still in the same place. They're going to do what's best for the bottom line. And right now, I really believe they will lean towards the protest because that's what the rest of the world is doing. That's what their sponsors and all the people that endorse them are doing right now. So I feel like with that by itself will move them in the right direction. But I don't know deep down inside if they really believe the moral compass, their moral compass, I don't know if it's leaning towards the right way.
Yeah, that was the point that Dominique was making yesterday, was don't do this because you feel suddenly the room has changed. And now, instead of being a financially imprudent move, it is the right move to make financially. Do it because you believe it's the right thing to do. Jeff, I'd like to hear a final word from you here.
Yeah, no, I agree with both Cliff and Boog. I mean, when you're talking about doing the right thing, it has so much more to do than just money, right? And if you know, we as a society look at this and say, hey, man, if this is the way everything has moved, however it pushes owners, I want owners, I want our league, I want people to understand that we can be on the forefront of this. And hopefully that's where Goodell is pushing the owners, whichever way they're doing, making sure they're moving in the direction that's for the betterment of our country and for our society as a whole.
We will have much more conversation on this as the day goes on. And as these guys stay with me, coming up next, we'll go on the field. We have some interesting news there. Dalvin Cook of the Vikings wants a big payday, but is he or any running back worth huge money the way the NFL is currently configured? We'll talk about that. And then to the NBA, Giannis and the Bucks, one of the big favorites this year. What is the future of their superstar if they don't win at all? We'll answer those questions as we continue. But first, we'll try to answer this one. Saturday is going to go at it with Sneaky Hembo. Here you go, Jeff. The question is, who owns the largest running back contract in NFL history by guaranteed money? That's the question, and the answer is next. We're just getting started. Get up on ESPN.
Is your money not sure what to do with itself right now? At Ally, they'll help it save for the future with their smart savings tools. Bucket your money for the things that matter most. Analyze your spending and save automatically, all on top of a competitive rate. For all things money, you deserve an Ally. Visit ally.com/savings for more info. Ally, do it right. Ally Bank, member FDIC.
Geico gets you access to licensed agents 24/7, which means that Geico is always there for you. If only everyone was always there for you, like your mom when you fill out really, really important paperwork on the first day of a new job.
Name, check. Birthday, Social Security, is that a thing? Hey, mom, what is my Social Security number? Mom? Okay, let's guess. 0017. Oh, Gemini. Hashtag done.
Geico, always there for you with savings and 24/7 access to licensed agents.
Get Up is brought to you by Gillette, the best a man can get. All right, the pressure's on Jeff Saturday. Here we go from Sneaky Hembo. Who, Jeff, owns the largest running back contract in NFL history by guaranteed money?
I'm gonna go Christian McCaffrey. How does Christian McCaffrey sound?
Christian McCaffrey sounds close. His new deal is the largest by average annual value, but it has only $36 million guaranteed. The correct answer is Zeke Elliott. Zeke Elliott has $50 million guaranteed dollars in his deal. He breaks the previous record, which had been held by Todd Gurley. Again, McCaffrey, by average annual value, is higher than them both, but he doesn't have it all guaranteed. Hembo says you fell right into his trap. Meanwhile, let's talk about another running back who wants some money. According to Adam Schefter, Vikings Pro Bowl runner Dalvin Cook would no longer participate in any team-related activities until and unless he receives what he determines to be a reasonable deal. He's out, a source told Schefty. Without a reasonable extension, he will not be showing up for camp or beyond. And Dalvin Cook is one of the best players in the NFL last year, ranking only behind McCaffrey for most yards per scrimmage per game. McCaffrey and every name on the screen other than Cook will rank in the top 10 in terms of highest paid backs this year. Cook's upcoming salary will rank him 49th. And so I want to bring Diana Russini our insider extraordinaire into this conversation with Booger and Cliff. And Diana, I will start with you. What are you hearing from inside about how the running back market, we can look at this specifically with regards to Cook, or sort of in a bigger sense, how the running back market is right now perceived?
Well, let's start with just Dalvin Cook in general, right? So this has actually been no secret that he's going to hold out here. He did attend a couple of those virtual meetings, but there's been whispers going on, going back to the fall, that he wasn't going to participate here in these practices until he got a new deal. And he's looking at around $13 million. That's like a David Johnson-type contract deal there. Now, in terms of his leverage, remember, Dalvin Cook hasn't played a 16-game season yet. He's dealt with some injuries. So in terms of the leverage here, it's not really working in his favor. And let's just take a step back and look at this running back market from a whole, because there's a lot of running backs right now looking for new deals here. And Greeny, whenever I talk to GMs about how they feel about the state of the running back market at this point, their health and their usage is always brought up. Guys want to get paid for what they've done, not for what they can do. And that's really the issue you run into here at this point. So in terms of going forward here, the days of Ezekiel Elliott, which we saw that mega deal, Christian McCaffrey, who plays every down, you can look at that and say they are worth that money. But so many general managers in the league now feel that they can really get these running backs in the draft in those third, fourth, fifth rounds here. Now, Minnesota does have the money to pay him. It's just whether or not they think he's worth it.
Right. I mean, basically, they draft these guys, they use them up in a couple of years, and then tell them they can't pay them because they have too much tread off of their tires. Booger, I'll just ask you directly. We've seen some of the moves that have been made. We've seen how they have turned out. Do you believe the Vikings, in this case, should go in big the way the Cowboys did and pay all this money to a running back?
Well, I think they have to, Greeny. If you look at how valuable he is to their team, and you understand what Mike Zimmer wants to do, let's not forget the backstory. Mike Zimmer fired John DeFilippo because he wasn't running the football enough. You bring in Kevin Stefanski to make this offense a more run-based offense. They want to run the football. Zimmer is a defensive coach. He wants to protect his defense. That's how they want to play football. So if you're going to play that way, you got to have a running back. And he's the most valuable asset to this offense outside of Kirk Cousins. So with all that being said, they have to pay him. Now, the key will be the structure. Are you going to structure it in a way where he gets some money in the early years? That way you don't become hampered in the later years. If they can do that, I think it can be a win-win. But make no mistake about it. Other than Kirk Cousins, he's the most valuable person on that football team. So, Greeny, whether they want to or not, they're kind of really going to have to take care of the running back.
An interesting thought. Cliff, let me look at some of the recent running backs that have been paid big money over the last couple of years. David Johnson got huge money with the Cardinals. He's not in Arizona anymore. Todd Gurley, big money with the Rams. He's not there anymore. The Jets and Le'Veon Bell. He's obviously no longer in Pittsburgh. We saw how that played out. Then the Cowboys with Zeke. They paid him all that money. They didn't make the playoffs. So I'll ask you the same question. Does it make sense, the way the game of football is structured and played in 2020, to give all of that money to a running back?
I think it does, and this is why I think it makes sense for them to give Cook, but not only having a solid run game and how important it is, right? You look at the Vikings and how much they ran the ball last year. 49% of their offense was running the ball, meaning Cook plays a major, major part of that, right? And then if you look at all the playoff teams, all of the playoff teams, 7 out of the 10 playoff teams had top running games per game, right? So I think in December, when it's time to make a playoff run, you need a running game. And the Vikings have a really special player in Cook, so you have to pay that man, on top of the fact that you need to pay that man so you can make a run in the playoffs and actually try to win a championship.
Yeah, I agree. He's the most important partner. To me, he's the most important piece of that offense, but that doesn't mean you necessarily have to do it. Diana, let's go through this with us a little more here.
Well, I think the biggest concern I hear is everyone saw what happened with the Rams with Todd Gurley. Look at the last few seasons here where, you know, I covered tons of Rams games. And Greeny, I must have asked Sean McVay over the last season or two over a dozen times, what is wrong with Todd Gurley? Why aren't you using him? I've asked Todd Gurley himself. So to have this gigantic question mark over a guy that they paid so much money, and look how they really put themselves in such a tough position with their cap. Teams are looking at that and going, do we want to put ourselves in that position? This also being said, good news for the Atlanta Falcons, who we know signed Todd Gurley. Adam Schefter reporting he was finally able to take his physical over the last few days, and he passed. So that is a good positive step forward there for Todd Gurley. But again, there is a very dark cloud over running backs because so many teams saw what happened with Gurley, who was a magnetic player just a few years ago.
There's a bunch of guys lined up behind this too, right, Booger? You got your Saquon Barkley and a lot of these other young running backs will be right behind these guys in line. Because if you're a running back, you got to get your money as soon as you possibly can.
Without a doubt. And Greeny, to your point, I don't think we can become afraid. Just because something happened with Todd Gurley, Ezekiel Elliott came out, even though the Cowboys' offense wasn't dynamic with the run game. They had a top-flight offense, but the run game wasn't what it was in the past. You can't be scared. Okay, Dalvin Cook has shown you over the last couple years, yes, he's missed a couple games, but he's still by far the most productive run-pass option that they've had in an offense. So let's not become afraid just because it happened one time with Todd Gurley. Dalvin Cook has earned his money, and I think it's up to Minnesota and the Spielman up there to make sure he has an opportunity to get his money and he can impact the offense the way he has the last couple years.
Let's see what they wind up doing. Again, Dalvin Cook is basically whatever it is we consider to be a holdout during this time when they're just doing everything virtually anyway. I guess in theory, he's holding out. We have more to go as we continue. I'll remind you, we also have more Korean baseball for you tomorrow morning, 5:25 a.m. Eastern on ESPN and the ESPN app. First place NC plays the second of three against Doosan. That's tomorrow, and we come on immediately after right here on ESPN. As we continue, Drew Brees' comments last week forced a difficult team conversation. You will hear the advice the Saints received from a very big fan as we continue. You're watching Get Up on ESPN.
Is your money not sure what to do with itself right now? At Ally, they'll help it save for the future with their smart savings tools. Bucket your money for the things that matter most. Analyze your spending and save automatically, all on top of a competitive rate. For all things money, you deserve an Ally. Visit ally.com/savings for more info. Ally, do it right. Ally Bank, member FDIC.
Top-ranked boxing returns to ESPN tonight, the first of four nights of fights in 7 days, headlined by rising superstar and WBO featherweight champ Shakur Stevenson in the main event bout. Our coverage begins at 7 Eastern from Las Vegas on ESPN, the ESPN app, and ESPN Deportes. Mike Greenberg with you here in Bristol, Connecticut, as we approach the bottom of the hour on the East Coast here, 9:30 a.m. Eastern time. As we are in a little bit of a different time situation here, we follow Korean baseball these days, and so we will be with you till 11 a.m. Eastern time this morning, and then it'll be time for First Take. In the meantime, we have our insiders ready to go here as we will cover the very latest in the return of three different sports, and you see them there, Jeff Passan, Diana Russini, and Brian Windhorst are with us. Passan, we'll start with you. Major League Baseball made another proposal to the Players Association yesterday, this one calling for a 76-game season, with players receiving 75% of their prorated salaries if a full postseason is played. However, the plan calls for less guaranteed money for the players over that 76-game regular season. So, Jeff, I think the fans, I'm sure many of them are getting a little tired of hearing all this stuff thrown back and forth with a lot of the specifics. What do the fans need to know about this offer yesterday?
The fans need to know, Greeny, that it's not taking baseball anywhere good, in that the more time that the sport spends arguing over these positions that seem to be completely intractable, the less time there is to actually play baseball games, which is the whole point of this thing, right? You know, I look back at May 12th. It was about a month ago now, and Major League Baseball was about to go to the players, never did, but wanted to go to the players and say, let's do a 50-50 revenue split. Let's just cut all the money we make this year right down the middle, split it evenly. The players said, no way, no chance. That reeks of a salary cap. Here we are almost a month later, Greeny, and yesterday's proposal, if it really played out to fruition, all the playoffs were played, players would make $1.43 billion. Do you know how much money Major League Baseball projects to make in 2020? $2.87 billion. That is a 50-50 split. Mm-hmm. We are exactly where we were a month ago. There has been no progress made, and that's the most frustrating part of this whole thing.
I completely agree with you. I feel the frustration. I frantically searched to find this thing on Twitter so I could give credit where it was due to whoever posted it. I couldn't find it, but I'll just say it because it made me laugh. Someone said the owners yesterday moved from 6-1 to half a dozen the other in the offer that they made to the players. Is that, in your view, a reasonably accurate way of describing the offer they made yesterday?
That was my friend Andy McCullough, Greeny, okay. And I think it was awfully well put, actually, because, you know, if you look at the offer, Major League Baseball did take some incremental steps forward. It got rid of, for example, the qualifying offer, which is something that's been a hindrance on free agency in years past and has hurt some players' markets. But in terms of the money, if you're going to go to players and say, we want to come in your direction, we want to show you that there is a deal that we can offer that's worth taking, you can't offer them less guaranteed money. It's just, it's a non-starter. And if you look at the amount of money in the end that was potentially offered, listen, the players want their full prorated salaries. This was equivalent to about 57 games of fully prorated salaries. And I think, Greeny, that if you got up to 70, 72, 75, somewhere in that range, that there could be a deal made. We're talking a marginal difference in losses projected by MLB of only like $125 million there. So we're down to like $4 million a team separating the sides. And that is just too small of a gap for the money to be the thing keeping baseball from coming back.
Yes, just get it done. I'm at this point, Jeff, I'm charging you with getting it done. This is your job. Get the next time you come on, I want you to tell me they've got this thing done. Thank you, Jeff Passan, very much. Let me get to the NBA next. At some point this week, the NBA is expected to reveal protocols for all players from the 22 teams competing in Orlando for the NBA championship. That plan, of course, will include COVID-19 testing, and there's a lot to put together. They are ready to come back and play on the floor, and our Brian Windhorst is ready to cover it all, and he's been on top of all of this for us really from the very beginning. So, Windy, what is the latest here? I'll ask you the same question. What are the most important things that the basketball fans need to know?
Well, I think if you're an NBA player, one of the things that you have found out in the last day or so is that there is not going to be recreational drug testing in the bubble. And to be honest with you, I get it. They haven't been doing drug testing at all during the pandemic. They are going to do testing for PEDs. But, Greeny, the way this is looking, you are not going to be able to invite your significant other into this bubble for somewhere between 6 and 7 weeks from when you get to Orlando till if you make it past the first round of the playoffs. And you're going to have to be tested every single day for the coronavirus and whatever version of tests that they decide to settle on. Now, could this potentially be a pathway for the legalization of marijuana in the NBA? That I can't say. There's 1,000 other things that have to be negotiated. But, you know, the NBA is trying to come to terms with the players and try to throw them a bone here. And one of the things they're going to say is, look, we're going to look the other way. In a state in Florida where marijuana is not legal, but it is decriminalized and certainly will be decriminalized inside the bubble.
Okay, well, that's a very interesting note there. It's not where I was expecting this to go at all. But candidly, it's the most fun thing we've talked about so far today. What else? How about the on-the-court stuff? Where are we? What's the latest there?
Yeah, so when this protocol comes out, which I've told you is going to be very long, there's going to be a lot of people screaming about things. And I'm just going to say right now, everybody has to just get on the understanding. This is going to be unfair. You know, like at the bottom of this, at the bedrock, is that we are trying to keep everything safe. And, you know, for example, I hear Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant talking about wanting to go in there with their teams, even though they're not going to play. And I would just say the answer to that is no, because the entire concept of this is to take people out of the bubble. And just like these other teams that are outside the bubble, those 8 teams who are saying this is not fair that we don't have the same opportunity to work with our teams. Yeah, it's not fair. That's just the way that it's going to be. The schedule that's going to come out soon, probably this week, is not going to be fair. This is completely unprecedented. And I see people applying rationality of normal times to this scenario, and it's just not going to be that way.
Fair enough. I can see why they all want to go. You're making the bubble sound like it's going to be a lot of fun under the circumstances. I guess we'll see how that turns out. Wendy, very well done. Thank you very much, my man. Let me get to Diana here. The NFL, they sent a memo to all 32 teams yesterday outlining the league's protocols for the full reopening of team practice facilities. No timetable has been set for the return of most players to team facilities. Right now, only those who are rehabbing injuries have been allowed in the buildings. But we're getting closer to the time. We've got to get this stuff figured out. So, Diana, you've got a memo from the league. What are some of the biggest challenges that teams are facing as they prepare to come back and start working together again?
Yeah, Mike, the league has been really thorough with this. This memo was very long with a lot of details. In fact, I spoke with one GM who said, do me a favor, go through this and give me the Cliff's Notes because I'm having a hard time understanding this. But essentially, at this point, we've all been able to digest it. And for the players, it's basically going to look very different than what we've seen in years past. The lockers, they're going to be 6 feet apart. Their helmets and pads are going to be all wiped down. There's only going to be about 10 to 15 people allowed in each meeting room, where the virtual meetings are really going to probably be the way to go to make sure that social spacing is happening inside the facilities. Everyone's going to have to wear masks when they enter. But this is the part of it that may sound a little odd. While they're going to take all these precautions in the facility, they're still going to practice normally. Now, we don't know if they're going to have any extra gear on their helmets at this point, but they're going to be very cautious in the facility. They're going to get their temperature taken when they arrive every single morning. And the idea is, or at least the thought in the league right now, is someone's going to probably test positive for this at some point over the season. They just want to be able to control it and make sure they separate the guy so it doesn't spread to them and spread to their families back at home where they live.
It seems like a given that someone will test positive along the way, probably soon. They're just, is that the situation where they will just isolate that player? And there's no way in the world they can shut things down because one player tests positive, yes?
Exactly. And I spoke to a head coach headed into his facility this morning about it, just asking specifically, like, how do you guys approach this, knowing that this is different? This is not going to be your normal training camp, your normal routine of practice. And he said, you know, while we're working on the details and making sure we abide by all these rules, for me, my message is to make sure that none of this is a distraction, because everyone is faced with this. But when it comes down to it and week one is here, we have to play football and we have to be prepared and ready to go. So while we're all still trying to figure out what football will look like over the next 2-3 months, for many teams, it's really just trying to keep the focus and the concentration of their entire organization at trying to be successful.
Obviously, you'll be all over that for us as we continue. I'll be enjoying those reports. I'll be hanging out down there in the NBA's bubble. All right. We have much more as we continue here. They were the key pieces of the process. So what happens if Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons don't win a title this year? Burning NBA questions and answers with Jay Williams and company as we continue. Look at Jay Will. He's ready to go. We're back in just a moment. Get up on ESPN.
Napa know-how. Father's Day knickknacks, that funny mug, ironic tie, or worse, IOU coupon books. It's time to get yourself something you want, Dad, like a Craftsman half-inch corded impact wrench for $99.99. It's the perfect gift to give to yourself. And while you're here, don't forget to shop all our great deals on Craftsman tools. Quality parts, helpful people. That's Napa know-how. Napa know-how. At participating Napa Auto Parts stores while supplies last. Offer ends 6/30/20.
We're back on Get Up and talking about the NBA, where the Lakers are the favorites to come out of the Western Conference playoffs this year at plus 130. And LeBron James looks to join Bill Russell, Sam Jones, and Kareem as the only players to make the finals 10 times. The Clippers have the second best odds to win the West. They're plus 160. They're 49 seasons without making it to the finals. Directly preceding or even the round before that is the longest in league history. In the East, the Bucks are overwhelming favorites to reach the finals at minus 230. Milwaukee looking to make it for the third time in history, first time since 1974. And the Celtics are behind them in the East at plus 500 at 43-21. Boston is on pace to post its best winning record since the season that ended in 2011. Looking at a little deeper into it, the defending champion Raptors have the next shortest odds to win the East, with the Sixers right behind them. The 10th seed Pelicans have the sixth shortest odds to capture the West of the 13 teams that remain. Remember, they've been a different team since they got Zion Williamson back. We will answer some big questions around the NBA. Wendy's still with us, and Jay Will joins us this morning as well. And so, Jay Will, I'll start with you, and we'll start in Milwaukee. We just mentioned the Bucks are a prohibitive favorite. Second year in a row, they'll be the one seed in the Eastern Conference. Giannis will be going into the final year of his deal when this season comes to an end. So what would you say is at stake for them and for him if it doesn't go well in these playoffs?
Well, I mean, he's in his seventh season with the Milwaukee Bucks. And it, just to give context to fans, you know, after LeBron James spent seven seasons in Cleveland after not winning a championship, that is when he decided to leave for Miami. I do not see Giannis leaving Milwaukee, even if they were to lose. That's just my personal opinion on this. Obviously, a lot of things can change. I think the relationship that he has with Mark Lazary, John Horst, who is the GM, I think is a very special relationship. He seems more like a small town market individual. Doesn't seem to be loomed away to the big cities by the lights. And I think if anything, this pandemic has kind of showed him the power of a smaller market and some of the things he can do. But there's a lot of time left to be told, and we'll get a chance to watch with the front row seat.
Well, Wendy, he mentioned the pandemic, and that could have another impact on how this plays out. What's that?
Yeah, so the reason that the Supermax was even put into the NBA was for this exact reason, to offer superstars so much money that they don't want to leave. It's had mixed success. The problem, however, is we don't know what the salary cap is going to look like next year. And even if the Bucks went 16-0 through the playoffs, if the salary cap collapses, it may not make economic sense for Giannis to extend. And this could even also apply to the Lakers and Anthony Davis. Anthony Davis could be smiling from ear to ear, so happy to be in L.A., but it may not behoove him to sign a long-term contract this summer. So the results on the floor obviously matter, but the negotiations with the CBA and what happens with the salary cap may matter more about whether these guys re-sign this summer.
And to be clear, that would mean that Giannis would play into the last year of his contract, and then, you know, all bets are off. You never know when things like that happen. Here's the next one. Let's talk about the 76ers. Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons basically are the process. And you know, Jay Will, you and I have talked a lot over the course of the time that you've been with me here on this show about that team and how it's just never quite fit together perfectly. So if this thing should get cut short abruptly in this postseason, Wendy, I'll start this one with you. What's at stake there? What happens then?
This is one of the things that people and executives have been talking about for 9 months now, long before we knew what COVID-19 was. And the feeling is that with talent like this, you try everything you possibly can before breaking them up. So if they do not have a strong postseason, I think Brett Brown's job would be on the line first before they would consider breaking these guys up. But one more thing I got to say about the money. The 76ers are scheduled to have $145 million payroll next year. That was based on things staying the same. If the salary cap collapses, they may have to cut salary and break up the team anyway. So much of this is going to hinge on these negotiations.
Let's try and put that piece to the side. It's important, no question. But just looking at it from a basketball perspective, Jay Williams, if you were making the decisions in Philadelphia and this thing were to get cut short in this playoff run here, would you be considering, not forget considering, would you be thinking, I need to break these two guys up?
I would try to do, that would be my last resort. But if I got to my last resort, and I've been on our show talking about this, Greeny, last year, I would build my team around Ben Simmons. Now, I know Joel Embiid is a very special talent, and there's no doubt that talent-wise, he's one of the best there is in the league. The question for Joel Embiid is about health. And I know Ben Simmons is coming off an injury, and now his health is in question to a degree too. But there's been a scope of work as it relates to health injuries for Joel Embiid. And I think that's the main question. Can he remain healthy? And is that sustainable for the next 10 years of a franchise where I have a guy like Ben Simmons who, you know, the way he can get people involved in the game, the pace in which he can play at the game, his defensive prowl, which is something that is incredible. I think he's the upper defensive player of the year this year in the league. I would build my team around Ben Simmons if you're asking me. If it comes down to that, I will go with Ben.
Is Ben Simmons a better player without Joel Embiid on his team? It's not a disrespect to Embiid, but based upon the way they both play, Jay Will, is Simmons better without Embiid?
It just opens up the floor. It opens up the floor for the pace that this team, it looks like at times, should be playing at. you know, Joel Embiid at times, you know, his game is centered down low on the block. I know he has the ability to shoot. Those numbers have gotten a little bit better over the course of his career. But, you know, as every when you watch basketball, you don't want to see Joel Embiid lagging in the system in order for him to come down and shoot threes. And somebody could say, well, in playoff basketball, the game slows down. But the metrics actually don't prove that. The game is almost at the same speed that they are during the regular season. So if that is a pace and space style of game, I go with Ben Simmons.
All right, one more. Let's have a little fun with this if we can. I mentioned the Pelicans have been a completely different team from the time that Zion came back and they started working forward with him. So should they make it into the playoffs, and it'll be tough for them, but if they get in, Windy, are they a real threat with a healthy Zion?
My guess is no, saying that I can't predict what's going to happen in this bubble. You know, they have had a lot of young players on this roster. Even forget about Zion. It would be Lonzo Ball's first playoffs. It would be Brandon Ingram's first playoffs. Yeah, they do have some veterans. J.J. Redick, Drew Holiday, Derek Favors. But if they make the playoffs, it would be a tremendous step for their growth. And they want to make it. This is something they've said all year long. I'd like to see them there, but I don't know if they can make any noise with all that inexperience.
They will?
No. No, they cannot. And that's not a diss to the New Orleans Pelicans. I think they're one of the most exciting teams in basketball. I think experience plays a major factor when you get into playoffs. Will it be exciting to watch? But when I hear the word threat, I think about a team that I actually can challenge for the Western Conference title. And they're not a threat. Maybe potentially get a first round win. Maybe. But no, they're not a threat.
Well, let's consider that for a minute. Let's say they're the 8 seed and they have all those former Lakers. And now suddenly they're taking on the Lakers and there is no home court advantage. Are they any threat in that series at all?
I don't think they're a threat, Greeny, but I will say this. I think the phrase that should be coined here on our show is playoff madness. And with guys, you know, and Wendy, you know this too, brother, like taking 2+ months off from basketball, who knows what guys have been able to work out. Now you're going to try to scale the season very quickly. Injuries, Anthony Davis has had injuries. LeBron had an injury last year. Who knows how things can play out, guys? This is going to be chaotic.
Quickly, Wendy, what do you think?
Listen, playoff LeBron would be the greatest lesson that Zion Williamson could ever get at this age. And playoff LeBron, if he's healthy, would be nothing the Pelicans could handle.
Okay, I can't disagree with that. Guys, outstanding. Great to talk some basketball here. We work our way towards the start of the season. Meanwhile, we have much more to do as we continue getting up this morning. Packers made a bold choice, taking Aaron Rodgers' heir apparent in the draft. Why history repeated itself, and how it could backfire next.